Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm Stacey Toth, best-selling author and co-creator of PaleoParents.com, where we focus on real-life solutions for families seeking health.
I'm Dr. Sarah Ballantyne, New York Times best-selling author and creator of ThePaleoMom.com. I'm passionate about improving scientific literacy around public health topics.
I like hashtags and bone broth.
And I'm just a super nerd.
Listeners, we told you we'd be back. And look, I'm even saying hello to you first. Is this twice in a row?
I think this is three times in a row. This is like, it's the new thing.
I like them. Listen.
I know, I do too.
It's taken a lot of shows to get to this point.
Nearly 5 years worth of shows.
I'm pretty sure. And we get scolded by Matt all the time for having really bad math on episodes. But I'm pretty sure that this is episode 249. We will hit 250 episodes next week, people.
Do you know what's amazing to me about that? Okay, so first of all, that's like a really big number. It means we had apparently some things to say. But we've also never missed a week. So it's like 250 straight weeks of podcasting.
It's a long time. We've talked about things that we haven't been committed to for as long as that. And here we are back again, much to your delight or chagrin. Who knows? If it's your chagrin,
presumably,
I'm not quite sure why you're still listening.
Yeah, presumably if someone's chagrined to hear that we're still on, they can just hit the unsubscribe on iTunes button and never hear from us again.
Okay, can I tell you this story that happened to me? And this is totally an experience that I think we all have, but I think that this is related to that comment. This has absolutely nothing to do with the show. It's completely off topic, taking us back to our original days. So I was in line at the grocery store the other day, and all of the lines were really long. And I asked Finn to run and get one more item that was like in a place where I could still see him. And he was carrying the little arm cart thingamabob. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And so he came back as it was time for us to put the stuff in the cart. We didn't hold up the line. We didn't ruin anything for anybody. And this guy, two people behind us in the line, started freaking out. And he was like, if I would have known that you were in line, I wouldn't have gotten in line. I was like, but I was standing here the whole time. Like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, you weren't holding space for an extra person who was going to go through the checkout after you.
No, it was just me.
It was
just
your
me.
Kid running to get one more thing.
Yeah, just me.
Clearly belonging to you.
Yep. Anyway, so I could tell that it was going in like a really aggressive sort of manner. And I had this like moment of like, I don't know, enlightenment come upon me, or I just was like, wow, this guy's life is really miserable. Like this, you know, like being in a grocery store line is so awful to him that he is going to publicly pick a fight with someone who has a small child with them, like about a few grocery items and being in line. And so I want to encourage us all. And how I responded to him is because he was super aggressive and he wouldn't let it go. Even after I wasn't responding, like he just kept on and he was like leaning over the person that was between us. And I could tell that person was really uncomfortable. And so I just looked at him and I was like, I'm really sorry that you're having such a bad day. This has impacted you. I'm sorry. Like I just kept putting my stuff on the belt and then I turned around and faced the cashier and didn't like move forward. And that was the first time that I've said I'm sorry intentionally in a while. I've had this like pact with myself to try to use different words other than I'm sorry, because I felt like everyone around me is using it too much, and I was as well. And so I like thoughtfully and intentionally used the word, and it was really interesting to see that exchange. So my point to that whole story is that that exchange really reminded me that if you're actively listening to something that you're not enjoying, like, it's not a good life choice. It's not helping you be positive in your life. So you can just remove it. Not that we want you to go. We hope that you like us. We like you. But if it's not working out, no hard feelings. It's okay.
The other perfectly acceptable option, because the show notes always have timestamps in them for our discussions. If you like when we answer questions and you don't like when we have our little personal chit chat at the beginning of the shows, you can just fast forward through it. It's fine. Our feelings aren't hurt. I mean, our feelings are a little bit hurt, but mostly we're okay. We're grown-ups. We can take it. So
yeah, we don't chit chat too much anymore. So, but we understand.
That's true. We don't chit chat as much as we used to. Mostly, I think, because we're both going through crazy times.
Crazy time.
Can I tell you about my crazy time?
I want to hear all about it.
So Friday evening at 5 minutes to 6, I turned in the rest of Paleo Principles.
Woohoo!
And I had a phone call with my publisher, and then I had a long email exchange with my editor. And because I've been turning it in, you know, this was one of the, like, it's another beast of a book. It's actually going to be substantially longer than Paleo Approach, if you can imagine. And so it was one of the things that we strategized right from the beginning was like, okay, how are we going to edit and design this book because it's so big. So what I've been doing for the last, I'm going to say like 4 or 5 months, is turning in a chapter at a time as I finish it. So I had most of the book drafted, and then over the last 5 or 6 months, I've been going through the draft and polishing and adding where needed and like outlining infographics and things like that. So I've been turning in a chapter at a time as I wrap them up. So they've been editing the book while I've been finishing writing it. So what's great is I got edits today. So I turned it in Friday, and it was like, yeah, you know, early next week, they know I'm going to PaleoFX and I'm not going to get to it for a week, but, they have most of the books already edited. Apparently there's designs already for me to look at. So there's, you know, what we've done is, instead of, I think what's more typical is to kind of do things very linearly. So author writes book. Book gets submitted to editor. Editor edits book. Author goes through edits. Book goes to design team. Design team designs book. Author approves designs. Then copy editing, and then all the little minutia. And this is sort of this, like, even the copy editor's already been in the book. So there's, it's sort of, it's a lot more multitasky. So there's a lot of different hands all doing different pieces of the book all at once. But the good news is that it's, you know, completely on track. So we go to print at the end of July. So I'm up for, you know, 2.5 pretty intense months. But then the release date, September 5th, and that's going to happen. So I wasn't sure, because I didn't, you know, it's sort of been a black box. I've been turning in chapter at a time, and they have been not bothering me and not giving me edits because they wanted me to finish the book first. So I was like, boy, I really hope they're doing something with all this material as I turn it in. And turns out, yep, they were. So so it's good. So
I think the important part for the listeners is, you know, how you are really striving and working towards getting them the product by the time that was anticipated. And it sounds like that's on task, which is super exciting for everybody. Cause I am, I'm really interested in the audio, which probably won't be ready from day one, but nevertheless, we all want it in our hands.
So, the plan is that basically as soon as the book goes to the printer, there's about 5 to 6 weeks. One of the great things about our publisher is the books are printed domestically. So there's a really short time time turnaround between when the books go to print and when they can be stocked in warehouses. So compared to, you know, the big publishers that print in China, there's like 6 to 8 months between when the book is actually done and submitted to the printer before it's actually in bookstores. And because Victor Belt prints domestically, we have this really, really short turnaround time. But the plan is to basically go straight from that to recording the audio. It's going to be, I think we were talking about this last week in the show, it's going to be an abridged version. So like, I'm not going to be reading out 233 recipes, weirdly. And that was sort of a decision.
I appreciate that.
Right. Well, I think we all, you know, we had this conversation about the audiobook, and I just said, I don't think that audiobook recipes is a very useful format for following a recipe. And then there's various like tables of, right, like here's the nutrients and nuts, and I have, you know, recommended daily allowance tables and stuff like that. So there's various places of just information in tabular form. And I'm like, I don't think that reading that also is a thing that's going to help people. So what we're doing is basically calling it an abridged audiobook. It's still going to be the vast majority of the main narrative, but we get to cut out tables and, you know, long strings of just me reading numbers and not, you know, and cutting out the recipes to make it really flow. So it is, you know, hopefully a pleasant audiobook to listen to. I'll have to figure out how to stay energetic for 8-hour recording sessions. But yeah, so that, I don't know how long it takes to edit once it's recorded and how long, right, formatting and stuff like that takes, but I'm cautiously optimistic. I think the plan right now is to be able to have that ready for the release date.
Well, that's sooner than I expected. That's awesome.
Yeah. So, I mean, this will be my first audiobook. So it's my fourth book. I feel like I'm old hat at this whole writing a book thing, although they're all hard. I don't know why I think it's going to get easier. But this is my first audiobook. So that's going to be the big learning curve for me this time, and is just understanding. I mean, I've done some, you know, recording studio recordings type stuff before. I did some of that for filming the Paleo Bites television pilot. So that whole part of it, I have a fairly good sense of how that looks and how that's going to go. But in terms of, I mean, how carefully things are edited, how good do I have to be when I read? That's my big question. I don't actually know the answer to that yet, but we'll see. We'll see. So that'll be my fun new thing that I get to learn on this one.
Sweet. Well, we do have a topic for this week, which we've postponed like a bajillion times. So I'm excited to actually talk about it.
This is a question that we have nearly centered our show around several times, and it's been bumped for various things a few times now. We don't have your magical segue for this, do we?
That was my best attempt.
Was your best segue. Attempt at? That was pretty
thanks
much.
Thanks for making me feel real good about it.
Sorry, I rely on you and your segues.
I thought I took us to where we needed to be.
You did. You just didn't take our audience there. That's all I'm saying. Yeah, so we've had this question for a while, and one of the things that I like about this question, and it's been one that we've been meaning to tackle, is there's sort of two elements to this question. So this is from a mother who is sort of struggling with one of her kids having eczema. And one of the things that I really like about this question is that there's part of this question that is sort of like the technical, right? How do you actually treat eczema? And then part of it, it's like, how do you get a kid to make choices that are healing choices? And so I feel like we can tackle this question from both sides. So maybe I should just read the question and we can get on with it.
I think it's also a good bridge from last week's episode for those who, you know, are reading in a linear fashion.
Listening? They're not actually reading us.
Yes, that's good. Yep. Stacey's awake. Yeah.
Yeah. So our listener writes, I'm a mom of four boys, two of whom have eczema. My 11-year-old is really struggling lately. He has had eczema for years, but it is getting worse. He has discoloration on his arms due to the eczema, and since July has had recurring skin infections. The doctors, pediatrician, and dermatologist have no other suggestions besides creams and oral antibiotics. I asked about tips for trying an elimination diet or further testing for food sensitivities and was told that diet doesn't make much of a difference, which I don't believe. Do you have suggestions on how to proceed? Should we start with an elimination diet, paleo, or should we have further medical testings or testing for food sensitivities? He had basic allergy testing a few years ago, and that was negative. We use natural skincare and cleaning products. He also has a history of being on antibiotics quite a bit in the past, frequent ear infections and ear tubes as an infant, then 8 or more bouts of strep throat about 4 years ago. He has been on oral antibiotics 3 times since July for the skin infection, and another time we waited to fill a prescription and just use a prescription antibiotic ointment, and that helped for the most part. I hate for him to be on antibiotics again, but he showed me tonight that he has some spots and that are severe and look infected again. I'm desperate for some advice. I'm working on going paleo myself, but I'm not 100% at this time. Any suggestions on how to help the family get on board? I recently found your podcast and keep hearing about the Paleo Family Toolkit, but it seems that isn't available anymore. Any tips would be appreciated. Thanks.
So my heart hurt for that kid as we read off the number of issues that has been ailing him. I would say that I myself have a son who has eczema. First of all, fist bumps to a family of boys. But I think first and foremost, you know, my recommendation would be to approach it together. So I think my children really appreciate when we say we're going to do something together as a family. And we've done things like what we call a junk food reset, which is kind of like our family's version of a cross between a Whole30 and a 21-day sugar detox, or what looks like either phase 2 or phase 3 in real life paleo, where we stick to clean eating for a committed period of time between us as a family. And we say what we're going to do. And in the case of, you know, eczema, I would recommend, and I'm sure Sarah can talk about the science of it, a couple of additional removals from the table, so to speak, from the rotations for anywhere from two weeks to 30 days, however long you think you can get your kids to commit. When I did it, I asked my kids for 14 sleeps because 30 days would have seemed like too long for them. And I was able to see results in my middle son who has eczema in that time frame, although we were able to see better results kind of at the 4 to 6 week mark. So I would say that doing it as a family and being committed to, okay, we're going to do this and we're going to see how much better we're going to feel or, you know, whatever. And I think for me, there were things that we did to offset or prioritize food. So instead of feeling deprived about the lack of grains or the lack of dairy, the lack of sugar, which are going to be like the most inflammatory foods, I focused on, okay, well, we're going to get a new game as a family and this week and after dinner, we're all going to play the game together as a family. And then maybe if you're used to, you know, sitting on the sofa watching TV, eating popcorn after dinner, you're focused on a different activity and kind of changing your habits from that perspective, which I think is a lot easier when you're trying to break something like a food habit. So specifically, I do think to answer your question, an elimination diet is really key to improving what sounds like probably imbalanced gut health. I don't want to, you know, give a medical diagnosis over a podcast because I don't know your family. But the list of ailments that were read off and the, you know, heavy use of antibiotics would lead me to believe that there's some dysbiosis of some kind. And I'm sure Sarah can talk about the details of that. But, you know, from my perspective, I think the more that you can focus on those healthy habits in general and positive things and doing it as a family. It'll help you be committed if you want to do it, and it'll help your child be committed so that they can experience the improvement in their health as well.
Yeah, so I guess I should tackle some of the more technical aspects of this question. Eczema, it's really hard to draw a direct link between eczema and food sensitivities. And a food sensitivity is different than an allergy. So an allergy is when our bodies make IgE antibodies against a protein in that food, or what's called an antigen, in a food antigen. We can produce different types of antibodies against that food, and those are not allergies. They don't show up on allergy tests because it doesn't create histamine. They're called intolerances, technically, if it's an IgG or IgA or IgM antibody. And then there's also other ways that we can react to foods that have nothing to do with antibody formation, and those are more broadly called food sensitivities. There is some indication in the scientific literature that common food intolerances, they look at like the top 8 allergen foods, are related to eczema. We know that eczema has a much higher occurrence rate in kids who also have food allergies. And there's a lot of anecdotal evidence to suggest that, and beyond the paleo community, right? So, ditching top 8 allergy foods for eczema has been a thing for decades in terms of alternative care, and it's often extremely effective. It was actually eczema along with another skin condition that brought me to paleo in the first place, and I have not had eczema since my first 2 weeks on paleo. And my kids, who both had patches of eczema, have not had eczema since going gluten-free. Like, they didn't even need to go completely paleo. So the idea of eczema being diet-related is not crazy, although it's clearly also more complex than that. So the current thinking with eczema is it used to be thought of as being a sort of primary immune function disorder. So the immune system is attacking the skin, and it's not thought to be that anymore. It's now thought to be some kind of barrier abnormality or barrier dysfunction of the skin that is allowing toxins and irritants and antigens into the deeper layers of skin. So the skin is not working very well in terms of its barrier function. So it's not working to keep what should be outside the body out and what's inside the body in. And that leak, it's like leaky skin. We talk about leaky gut a lot, but eczema is basically leaky skin. That's what primes the immune system. And then the immune system perpetuates the eczema patches. So it's thought now that dysfunctional skin barrier, it happens first, and then the immune reaction happens second. And dysfunctional skin barrier, there's certainly some genetics here. So they have isolated a couple of gene variants that affect a protein in skin called filaggrin, and affect how that filaggrin forms, and that can actually increase risk of eczema. And there may be some other genetics at play here. But we also know, for example, that skin health is very, very tied to gut microbiome health, which is, Stacey, you had sort of picked up on the same thing that I had is the frequent antibiotic use. And I don't want, I really want to emphasize that no one should feel shame at giving their kids antibiotics. I've given my kids antibiotics several times since going paleo. Antibiotics are a life-saving medication, and there's definitely a time and place for them. We avoid antibiotic use when it's not clearly indicated. And we do a lot of things to help recover our gut microbiomes after antibiotics, but more just from a flag of, frequent antibiotic use, it definitely causes a lack of biodiversity of the gut microbiome, and that can be a real problem from a general health perspective. And places where we see that is often skin. So there's a direct connection between gut health and skin health. And so fixing, you know, helping to grow a better diversity and correcting any potential dysbiosis in the gut is super important for dealing with eczema. And then there's also a few key nutrients that are really, really important for skin barrier health, but just, you know, barrier tissue health in general. The two probably most important are vitamin A, and that's the animal form of vitamin A, retinoic acid. So we get that from organ meat like liver and seafood, and also vitamin D. And so I think, you know, it should be a pretty easy ask to get one of the boys' doctors to do a vitamin D check. And they usually, I think the normal lab range is like 29 or 30 to 80 or something like that. It really, vitamin D really should be more in that sort of 50 to 60 range. So if it's down around 30, that's even if they're not calling it low, that's still a good indication that a vitamin D supplement would be useful. And then you just want to retest because too much vitamin D can also be a problem. So you don't want to be going much above 80. There can be definitely problems starting once vitamin D gets around 100. So vitamin A and vitamin D, which, you know, vitamin D we can also get from grass-fed meats and from seafood and from spending time out in the sun. Not everybody is great vitamin D converters, and that's where a supplement can be really helpful. And generally, you know, generally when people have low vitamin D, it can be very, very hard to get enough from food. So taking a supplement there is also, you know, totally warranted. And you specifically want to look for a vitamin D3 supplement. So those are two nutrients that people are, I mean, there's estimates that approximately 75% of Americans are deficient in vitamin D. Something like 57% of us don't get enough vitamin A. And that's even including, you know, what's called retinol equivalency. So that's looking at, you know, beta carotene, other carotenoids that can be converted into vitamin A. But conversion is like 5 to 6%. So it's actually pretty inefficient. And there's some other, you know, when you're talking about immune system health, zinc can be very, very important. Zinc is also very good for skin health. So there's also some minerals that can be very, very helpful. But zinc sort of stands out. And making sure that the boys are getting enough protein, especially glycine, which is rich in collagen. So you could be doing something like Vital Proteins collagen peptides, which you can mix in just about any liquid, or making gummies with gelatin or making homemade bone broth. Glycine is a main component of collagen. So that's you know, our skin is very, very high in collagen. That's what makes it bendy. So glycine is very, very important. Arginine is also important and in collagen formation. So you may get arginine especially from like seafood, but we can also get a good amount from nuts and seeds, although tree nuts might want to be eliminated just because of their high allergen and intolerance potential. And then glutamine can be very, very helpful. We also get that from broth and from meats, but also that you can get L-glutamine in supplement form. That can be very helpful for gut barrier health, but it also can be very good for skin barrier health and just general repair of damaged tissues in the body. So looking at, you know, part of this is looking at diet, not in terms of, is it paleo? Is it an elimination diet? But looking at it in terms of, is this diet providing the nutrients that the skin needs to have its barrier function? So, you know, are my kids, you know, are they getting enough vitamin D? Are they getting enough vitamin A? Vitamin C is also very, very important for skin health and collagen deposition. So are they getting enough vitamin C? It's surprising. You think vitamin C is so easy to get. You know, kids love fruit, so you think they must be fine, but it's actually pretty easy to be vitamin C deficient. Vegetables in general, so all of the phytochemicals, really, really helpful for controlling inflammation, but also, you know, antioxidants. can be very, very helpful for barrier function for skin. So looking at those things, I think make a lot of sense. So looking at the elimination side and cutting out triggers, paleo is an elimination diet. And especially if you look at the autoimmune protocol, that's like taking paleo to like the pinnacle of elimination diet status. But then also looking at the nutrition that your kids are getting. So are they, you know, it's not necessarily easy to, you can't make kids usually live in onions, but you can hide liver from them. So, you know, are there sneaky ways that you can get more nutrition into their diet? That can make a huge, huge difference.
So I would add that what can be really helpful to explain to children too is that this elimination period won't necessarily need to be forever. Because once we got Finn's eczema stabled and he wasn't having big inflammatory patches, it then enabled us to be able to reintroduce some foods. So, for example, rice is not a problem for him. But we also know that there are some foods that if he so much as gets it on his skin and, you know, has more than a couple of bites, that it's going to cause him to start to get kind of pink around the mouth, which is the warning signs of eczema reapproaching for him. Because he gets it first on his face, but then he used to have whole body eczema. He also has not had full body eczema since we originally went paleo, but when he goes through periods where he eats a lot of tomatoes, or he'll eat corn, or he'll eat other things that I don't eat because I know that they cause me problems. He and I have the same skin and inflammatory issues. I notice that it starts to pop up in him. And so the answer to your question is, how do I talk to my kids about this? You know, for me, Finn started paleo when he was 2.5, and he didn't know what was happening really. But now he knows that, you know, he wants gluten-free treats. He wants popcorn. He wants to eat gluten-free pizza like his brothers. Because it has tomato and cheese on it. Those kinds of food cause much more issues for him than they do in, let's say, his father and his brothers. So, you know, I find ways to talk to him about it, and we find alternatives. He really likes honey mustard instead of ketchup now. Or he'll even sometimes use mayonnaise as a dipping condiment, like if that's the only option. And I think, you know, it allows me to have a conversation with him when I see him be responding to those kinds of foods by saying, okay, this is a food that's really causing your body harm. It's hurting you. It's making your skin dry and itchy. If you continue to eat these, you're going to have problems. Let's try to, you know, not eat any of these foods for a week and see if we can get your skin to be better. The other thing that we haven't really talked about that I think would be helpful when you feel like we've addressed all of the inside stuff is there are some outside solutions, topical treatments for the skin that have also been really helpful for him and for me as well, because I have really sensitive skin. I don't necessarily have eczema, but I do think that when you're talking about treatments and you're especially talking about getting to a point where, you know, there's antibiotics involved because it's an infection. Are you talking about, you know, with Finn, there were steroid creams and whatever. It's really helpful for me now to be able to, you know, have an arsenal of products that help when I see things starting to come on that I know will reduce inflammation or will not kind of shock his body from the kind of ingredients that might be in a product.
Yeah. So before we, I think that's a really good place to wrap up. But before we go there, I wanted to elaborate a little bit on the gut health connection, just from a, like, how do you implement that part at home? So the two factors that have the fastest and strongest corrective influence on what bacterial strains are growing in the gut, one is eating a lot of vegetables and fruit. But so, you know, a diet rich in fruit and vegetables, which is something that you're going to do with paleo, but it's also something that you can do on your way to paleo. So as you, you know, say, hey, we're going to do, we're going to, like with my kids, we did gluten-free first, and then we did gluten and legumes. Legumes was not a hard thing for my family to get rid of. We didn't eat a ton of them beforehand. So we kind of did gluten-free and then grain-free and then dairy-free, while also giving up things like sugars. You know, my oldest already reacted terribly to food dyes. So that was already not a thing we did. So there was little bits and pieces we didn't have to work very hard to do. But as you're implementing the elimination diet part with kids, which I think, it depends on your kids. Like, you know, Stacy was able to just say, hey, 14 sleeps. With my kids, we did it in bits and pieces. And so it really depends on the personalities and ages that you're dealing with. But eating more vegetables can be like a concurrent step, right? Like, hey, we're going to try gluten-free, but we're also going to try and eat, you know, more broccoli and carrots, right? Like that's, you know, it's not usually that hard of a thing for, to be able to implement with kids. So there's lots of ways of cooking vegetables that can appeal to different kid palates. So a lot of vegetable intake. So it's specifically the fiber from fruits and vegetables that are corrective, and also, omega-3 fatty acids. So there's something about eating a lot. Basically eating a lot of fish, eating a lot of seafood, even potentially in the beginning phases doing a fish oil supplement. There's ones that you can get that are like a flavored fish oil that you just take off a spoon. The one that I have used before that's good quality is called Nutri-C, that, you know, Whole Foods carries it, but so do lots of like supplement stores. So even doing fish oil for like a month just to get on top of it can be very, very helpful. And there's separate studies showing that fish oil supplementation can be helpful in eczema. So that's a whole other separate thing. But omega-3s have a really strong corrective influence on gut bacteria. So fat seems to affect them based – it sort of affects the environment. So we know, for example, that really high saturated fat intake grows undesirable strains. For example, can increase growth of gram-negative bacteria like E. coli. And not that saturated fat is bad, it's just that high saturated fat intake is bad. So saturated fat really needs to be moderated. You know, hunter-gatherers got about 13% of their calories from saturated fat. And then high omega-3s can be very, very helpful for correcting gut microbiome. And there's actually studies that show that like 2 weeks of fish oil by itself and no other changes to the diet improves the composition and diversity of the gut microbiome. So when you can combine that with eating more vegetables, that has the potential to be extremely powerful. And then also seeing where you can add either a probiotic or, you know, when you get something like a raw sauerkraut that has way more strains of probiotic bacteria in it than any supplement. So like the most amazing, impressive supplements now are like 20 strains. Most that you can get just at a regular store would be between one and say eight strains. Sauerkraut has like 650 strains. So just a little comparison about that. But you can try things like kombucha. You can try things like water kefir. You know, those are actually much easier for me to get my kids to consume. They like kombucha. They like water kefir. They don't like sauerkraut, but there's definitely some overlap in the strains. Kombucha and kefir also have some beneficial yeast strains, so that can be very helpful as well. So where you can add some kind of fermented foods or probiotic to be able to basically re-inoculate the gut with good bacteria can be very, very helpful. And a lot of probiotics, the capsules, you can even open them up and sprinkle the powder on food or sprinkle it into a, you know, a glass of juice or something to get your kids to consume it. So, so those are the big tricks with gut health that can also sort of be done concurrently while tackling eliminations.
The other one I would add is my kids really like the Bubby's pickles and the Bubby's relish, which you can buy.
Whole Foods has it.
At almost most grocery stores that I shop at least.
I've seen the sauerkraut in Kroger, but I haven't seen the other Bubbies.
And the other important thing to consider when there's a sauerkraut is it needs to be refrigerated with active and live cultures or it'll say strains or, you know, there might be different words, but if you're buying the kind that's like bagged on the shelf, it no longer has the live.
Yeah. If it says pasteurized on it, put it back. That's just fancy cabbage.
Yeah.
It's not got live good stuff in it.
I don't recommend this for eczema because I find dairy to be a highly inflammatory food for people with skin issues. But yogurt is another source if your family's eating high quality dairy, which we talked about on the last podcast, can be a place to find
There's also naturally. Coconut milk yogurt is getting easier and easier to
coconut
find.
Coconut and almond milk yogurt.
And almond milk yogurt. I mean, they usually have
there's a lot of sugars, yeah.
They have sugars, and they usually have kind of cruddy emulsifiers, and, you know, they have, like, seven different bean extracts or whatever. But, you know, it's – and you can also make coconut milk yogurt at home relatively easily. It's not that hard. Although it's a pain in the butt. It's not hard. It's just that it takes like 10 hours. That's all.
Well, I think if someone's jumping into paleo, it's a lot to ask them to make,
right,
their own
to make your own yogurt
and natural starters and all that kind of stuff. So
I think that, you know, buying a coconut milk yogurt, even if it's got more sugar in it than you would normally want, and even though it's got some emulsifiers that are not great, as a here's what I can get that has probiotics into my kid, and here's what we can do that is a stepping stone towards paleo. Like, I think that's fine. And my kids will go through phases where they really want yogurt. And I'm like, you know, their diet is so clean. Otherwise, I tend not to worry about the, like, one item that they have that's maybe slightly suboptimal. Do you know what I mean?
I agree. That's that whole idea of transition. And I did write a book on that if people who are listening are trying to jump in. Real Life Paleo does address that slower transition and kind of worst offenders. But for me, I would say with the specific experience I have with Finn, his trigger foods, for what it's worth, are dairy and nightshades. He responds to popcorn, but in a different sort of way, corn in general. But in a different sort of way. So I don't know if that's eczema related, but his eczema flares if he eats a lot of dairy or a lot of nightshades. So those are the two that when you're prioritizing, if you have a skin condition, those are the two that we immediately pull back significantly or remove, we remove entirely when he starts to show signs of flaring. I don't eat nightshades at all, and I only eat very limited high fat, like heavy cream, dairy, unless it's like a special occasion or treat or something like that, because I too have very sensitive skin. So just FYI.
So why don't we wrap up with some natural skincare products that we've both found to be very, very helpful for sensitive skin.
Cool. So, I used to use the, Beauty Balm. Shoot, why can't I remember the name? The
Green Pastures.
Then there was all this kinds of drama about what kind of oils were being used in it and all that kind of stuff. But I would say if you've got some of that, if you're a listener and you already have it, that did help his eczema. He didn't like it, however, so it wasn't super helpful because he would refuse to put it on. he does really like just plain coconut oil. We have like a jar with it's a glass jar with a tin lid that we saved over from like olives or something that he puts his coconut oil in, and he leaves it in the bathroom or in his bedroom, and he'll put coconut oil on his dry skin. But it smells like coconut oil. So that did work, and that might be something that you have already laying around your house. But the products that he uses that he likes the best right now are actually both from Beauty Counter, which is like the natural skincare brand that our family has been using and loving. There's something called a soothing baby oil, and it's not regular baby oil, which has all kinds of weird oils and sometimes petroleum and stuff like that in it. It's a mineral based oil, and it's not fragranced. So I think that's why he likes that one the most. I think it serves the exact same purpose as the Beauty Balm and the coconut oil, except it doesn't have any fragrance to it. And then there's, we've started him on using the baby product line from Beauty Counter. So like when he takes a shower, his brothers use something different, but he uses the baby line because he has sensitive skin. And I also use the baby soothing oil, to remove my makeup. So I'm putting it on every single day as well. And I also use it, if I have like dry patches on my skin or something like that.
So I have a different collection of products that I have really fallen in love with for eczema. And also my 7-year-old will periodically get issues with keratosis pilaris, which is a slightly different skin condition. The mechanisms behind it are a little bit different, but I have found that the same sort of skin products that work well for my skin issues and my kids' skin issues work really well for that. So one is actually there's a company called the Eczema Company, and they do some, you know, natural fats, you know, tallow and olive oil type, you know, tallow balms. And then they also have a product that has beeswax and Manuka honey in it. That's a really, really lovely, thick, soothing cream. And there's actually some separate research to show that Manuka honey can be therapeutic for eczema. And they've actually, they spend a lot of time researching their ingredients, specifically for eczema. The other company that does products that are designed to be really healing and soothing, that you are actually, I think two other companies that use a lot of things like emu oil, which is known to be very helpful, tamanu oil, jojoba, shea butter. And these are actually all, you know, oils and fats that have a fair amount of scientific literature behind them. So, one is Dragonfly Traditions, which does some really nice, moisturizers, hand creams. And the other one is, Buffalo Gal, which is actually, her farm is local to me in Atlanta. And she also does, you know, she's got a really nice one that's designed for eczema that has, her buffalo tallow, but also has emu oil and I think a couple of other ingredients. So, I have generally found that the, sort of natural, nutrient rich, plant, and a lot of these plant oils have, so the animal oils like emu oil and tallow have vitamin A and vitamin D in them, which is one of the reasons why it's so helpful for skin barrier health. And a lot of the plant oils are really, really high in phytochemicals, which is why they're so good for skin health. But they also have some really interesting, like, triterpenes, which are known to improve, you know, skin elasticity and help with, a lot of these are have chemical compounds in them that are highly anti-inflammatory, that speed wound healing, you know, that improve skin barrier health. And those are all things that you want when you're putting something on eczema. So it's sort of, it's super crunchy granola. But those are the products that, you know, like I actually, you know, they're the ones that I have in my car, in my purse, on every bathroom counter, on my desk, in the kitchen, right? Those are the companies that I have, you know, their collection of products all over the place. And I usually just reach for whatever's closest, but they've been, very, very, very good for all of our skin.
Cool. So I think the only other thing that I would mention to you is to consider cleaning products and like detergents and stuff like that. It sounded like there was more body eczema going on. So you might want to consider looking at some cleaner options for that sort of stuff as well, just because harsh chemicals in general can be irritating on people with sensitive skin. So as you start to heal from the inside out, it will also alleviate the stress on the body and the skin if you can, you know, alleviate it on the outside as well. And I just want to totally back up what Sarah was saying about collagen and different kind of supplements that could potentially speed up the process. And that's something you can put in anything anybody drinks without having any sort of residue or flavor. Some people tell me that they can taste it, but I think it's just in their head. I think if they
seems to be like tasters and non-tasters. I put collagen in my tea and in my coffee generally. I think I can taste, if I put it in just plain water, I think I can taste it. Do you ever put it in just water?
No, I would never put it in plain water. That's weird. Yeah. If people are doing that, then maybe that's why. But like, you can put it in tea, you can put it in a smoothie, you can put it in your coffee. I've put it in just about anything and I can't taste it. I would not have put it in just plain water, but, yeah, I think that, you know, focusing on just getting in as much nutrients to help heal the gut is going to be the best thing. And then once you're at a point where you're seeing, you know, improvement in stability and gut health in general, you'll know, because you won't have infections, whether they be, you know, ear infections or skin or whatever. I think that I kind of take for granted that I've had the benefit of my kids. I think all three of my kids have only ever gone on antibiotics twice. And that's crazy town. Like, I have a 12-year-old, a 9-year-old, and a 7-year-old, almost 12-year-old, 9-year-old, and 7-year-old. And so for me to say in all those years, we've only ever purchased antibiotics for the kids twice, you know, I have to give a lot of credit to their guts and their immune systems, because I know that their friends are not as lucky. So I just was like rooting for gut health as I read that question, because I knew immediately that there was definitely a food intolerance from what I was hearing, as well as some gut issues. So I wish you all the luck in improving that situation.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think I'd just end on, you know, these types of skin conditions, you know, the body has to heal pretty substantially internally before it prioritizes resources for the skin. So skin can often be a slower responder than other health issues when making dietary changes. So remember that there's a lot of areas where you can tinker, and that also, you know, patients can definitely be very, very helpful, but there's tens of thousands of people out there who have been able to completely cure eczema with diet. So, don't be afraid to jump in and start working on it, because it can be incredibly powerful.
All right. Well, I feel like we have tackled this from as many angles as we possibly could. And I feel like hopefully they're armed with information to take back to the family and get their health on track. And I know that there will be a lot of listeners who, you know, they themselves or a family member has eczema. It's one of the most common issues that I hear about from, you know, my audience and people that I meet in person. So hopefully it was helpful, and we can put links in the show notes to some of the products that we've recommended. And obviously if you purchase through those links, we get a small portion of it, which helps us pay for things like this free podcast, which does not have any advertisers on it. So we appreciate any support that you give us, and for the fact that you hung in this long, because we gave you an option to dip out at the beginning and you're still here. So
true.
Thanks.
We totally gave people that out at the beginning of the show. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back with something special next week.
Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites, or by donating through PayPal.
No, that was my energy, and it is gone now. And I have to, tomorrow morning is the fourth grade author's tea at 7:20 in the morning. Aww. At the school. So I just realized we totally forgot to RSVP for the potluck aspect. I was like, I guess that means we're not bringing anything. Darn. It's like the whole fourth grade. I'm sure if like one family doesn't bring stuff, it's going to be fine.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure they don't like keep tabs on that stuff and kick you out too.
I'm pretty sure I have done enough amazing stuff for this school lately. I just judged the invention convention for the third graders. I don't even have a third grader. And I judged the invention convention for the entire third grade. I was like, they had five judges. Three of them were county school employees. And then two parents they were able to get. I was like, all right, it's fine. Totally fine. It's good. They at least provided coffee. Bribe me with coffee. I'll do it anytime. Okay. This is now me talking because I'm too tired to stop talking.